Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, The End of Alchemy Money, Banking, and the Future of the Global Economy is Mervyn King's analytical account of modern finance, written after his tenure as governor of the Bank of England from 2003 to 2013. It is not a memoir of crisis management, although King draws on direct experience of the 2007-2008 financial crisis. The book belongs to the fields of monetary economics, financial history, and public policy, and its purpose is to explain why banking systems repeatedly become unstable despite regulation, central banking, and technical expertise. King uses the metaphor of alchemy to describe the transformation of risky, illiquid bank assets into money that depositors treat as safe and instantly available. He argues that this structure creates fragility at the heart of market economies. The book combines historical explanation, critique of economic thinking, and institutional reform proposals, aiming to show how money and banking can be redesigned without abandoning the productive role of finance. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, bank-created money turns illiquid loans into seemingly safe deposits. King's central idea is that modern banking depends on a transformation that looks ordinary in daily life, but is structurally unstable. Banks make loans against assets that are uncertain, long-term, and often hard to sell quickly. At the same time, they issue deposits that customers treat as money, meaning they expect to withdraw or transfer them immediately at full value. This mismatch is the alchemy in the title. Private institutions appear to turn risky claims into safe purchasing power. The problem is not simply that bankers take excessive risks, but that the business model promises more liquidity than the underlying assets can provide if confidence breaks. In normal times, the arrangement supports credit creation, payments, and investment. In stress times, the same arrangement can produce panic because each depositor has a reason to withdraw before others do. King therefore presents bank runs as a symptom of a deeper design flaw. The apparent safety of bank money depends on trust, state support, and central bank backstops, not on the intrinsic liquidity of bank balance sheets. Secondly, the financial crisis exposed a system failure rather than only misconduct. The book treats the 2007-2008 crisis as evidence that the architecture of finance was defective. Not merely that individual bankers or regulators made poor decisions, King does not deny incompetence, greed, or flawed incentives. But he argues that these explanations are insufficient because they do not explain why similar patterns of fragility recur across different countries and periods. The crisis revealed how leverage, short-term funding, complex assets, and confidence-sensitive money creation could interact in a destructive way. Institutions that appeared solvent and well-managed could become vulnerable once markets doubted asset values or funding access. This shifts attention from blame to structure. If banks are allowed to fund uncertain assets with liabilities that function as money, then public authorities will face intense pressure to intervene when confidence collapses. Bailouts may prevent immediate disaster, but they also reinforce expectations of future rescue. King's argument is therefore uncomfortable for both free market defenders and regulatory optimists. The system requires public support. Yet existing forms of support can preserve the same fragility that caused the crisis. Thirdly, monetary history shows that rigid promises can magnify economic distress. King places modern banking within a longer history of money, including commodity money, gold, paper currency, and bank liabilities. This history matters because many monetary systems have relied on promises of convertibility or stability that become dangerous under pressure. His discussion of the gold standard and the interwar period illustrates how a monetary arrangement designed to create credibility can instead impose deflationary discipline when economic conditions change. Attempts to restore pre-war gold parities after the First World War contributed to tight monetary conditions and economic contraction, showing that rules can be destabilizing when they ignore real adjustment problems. This historical perspective supports King's broader point that money is a social and institutional technology, not a naturally stable object. Its success depends on credible arrangements, but credibility cannot mean pretending that all claims can always be honored on demand. By linking past regimes to present banking, King argues that the key issue is not whether money is backed by gold, paper, or bank assets, but whether the promises embedded in the system are realistic during stress. Fourthly, post-crisis stagnation reflects disequilibrium and constrained central banks. Beyond explaining the crash, King asks why advanced economies struggle to recover strongly after it. He connects weak growth to deeper imbalances in the world economy, including the difficulty of adjusting spending, saving, debt, and productivity after a major financial shock. Central banks reduced interest rates to extremely low levels to support demand and prevent depression. But King is skeptical that monetary policy alone can solve structural disequilibrium. low rates may stabilize the system temporarily, yet they can also encourage debt dependence and delay necessary balance sheet adjustment. The book also discusses a collective action problem among central banks. Each may hesitate to raise rates if doing so risks slowing recovery or appreciating its currency relative to others. This resembles a prisoner's dilemma, where individually cautious decisions can produce an unsatisfactory collective outcome. King's point is not that central banks are powerless, but that they operate within institutional and global constraints. Sustainable recovery requires more than technical rate setting. It requires addressing the financial structure and real economic weaknesses that monetary policy can only partially offset. Lastly, the pawnbroker for all seasons aims to replace ad hoc bailouts with prearranged liquidity. King's most distinctive reform proposal is often summarized as the pawnbroker for all seasons. The idea is to make the central bank liquidity backstop more systematic and less improvised. Banks would pre-position collateral with the central bank, and the central bank would determine in advance how much cash could be borrowed against those assets under stressed conditions. This would reduce uncertainty during a panic, because both banks and authorities would know the available liquidity before a crisis arrives. The proposal tries to preserve useful financial intermediation while ending the illusion that banks can always meet withdrawals without a credible support structure. It is less radical than plans to prohibit banks from creating money or impose full reserve banking, which King views as potentially disruptive. At the same time, it is more fundamental than adding layers of complex regulation after every crisis. The logic is preventive require banks to internalize liquidity risk before trouble appears, rather than relying on emergency discretion once panic has already begun. Critics question whether this fully addresses credit booms, asset inflation, or inequality, but it directly targets the run-prone nature of bank money. In conclusion, The End of Alchemy is best suited to readers who want a serious but accessible explanation of why banking crises arise and why conventional reforms may not be enough. Economists, policymakers, finance professionals, students of monetary history, and informed general readers will benefit most from it. Its practical value lies in clarifying the mechanisms behind liquidity crises, bank runs, central bank intervention, and post-crisis stagnation. Its intellectual value lies in reframing finance as an institutional system built on promises that can become impossible to honor under stress. The book stands out from many crisis accounts because it is neither a personal memoir nor a narrow narrative of the 2008 collapse. King writes from the perspective of a former central banker, but he focuses on the design of money and banking rather than insider drama. Compared with books that emphasize deregulation, fraud, or market psychology, this one gives more attention to the basic structure of bank-created money and the role of central banks as backstops. Its reform proposal, especially the pawnbroker for all seasons, makes the book more than diagnosis. Readers may disagree with the scope of the solution, but they will come away with a sharper understanding of why modern finance is productive, fragile, and difficult to reform. If you would like to support Mervyn King, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.